Accession number 272, Mr. Malcolm Frost, Reel 2. We were talking about your time with Gristock Platoon, the Royal Norfolk Regiment Depot, Britannia Barracks, Norwich, from October 51 onwards. We got on to drill during a typical day. Did you sort of enjoy drill? Did you understand the point of it?
Well, yeah, I understood the point of being able to take instruction and to be disciplined, basically. I mean, that's all about. I think the one or two people who came, and particularly the lad from Borstal, regarded themselves as a bit hard nuts, but they soon realised that NCOs had the upper hand and you couldn't afford to do anything other than do as you were told. Sometimes one felt that some of the drill was a little bit senseless, but one learnt to slope arms and present arms with a rifle and to drill and about turn and halt and slow march and quick march. And the most interesting part that I found was on the rifle ranges.
Well, let's go on to weapons training.
Yeah,
the first thing is the Lee Enfield, it would still be.
Yeah,
wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Now, tell me about rifle training, because we've done a lot about training. How did they take you through this barracks? How did they take you through rifle training?
Well, I mean, first of all, we taught how basically to handle it in drill, and then we were taught how to use it to fire it. But before that, we were taken down to rifle range, and we were taught to fire on 2.2 rifles. There's an interesting little story, you might like that. There was a Lance Corporal Garwood, who eventually became a sergeant, I believe, at the depot. We had 28 shillings a week, and we had 2 bob of that was taken for barrack room damages, just in case we never saw that again. A small amount we gave to have a bit of a booze up passing out parade time after 6 weeks, and he always used to organise that recruits coughed up at least a couple of bob, and the one with the best grouping on the rifle range used to take the money, which was usually him. What he didn't realise was that my father was a first class shot, and we had a long kitchen in the council house. And my uncle and cousins lived across the road. And our evening entertainment was to light one end of the kitchen with an air rifle, to have a sack with a bar of soap and a red match at the other end, and to see who could ignite the match with a shot. And so I knew how to handle a gun fairly well. And he was most perturbed that on the first occasion we went to the rifle range, I got the money and not him.
Did you continue to win it, or did he stop the competition?
We didn't go down again. The RSM Buck, he was very, very strict, and he always used to come out when we were drilling and used to make his presence known. But in the main, the NCOs were...
Hang on, I'll come back to that. Sticking with rifle training, so that's a point 2.2. What about the step up to the big rifle? I mean, the Lee Enfield?
Well, it seemed to be a natural progression. I mean, it was a much heavier article, obviously. But most of our rifle training and range training took place in continuation training. I mean, we had very little weapon training and in basic training other than to learn how to handle a rifle, and we had the first sort of introduction to the Bren gun. That was it.
Well, tell us about the Bren gun. What were your first impressions of the Bren gun?
It was a bit of time to learn how to strip it and reassemble it, but that largely took place in continuation training. We had to learn all the various bits and pieces and how to strip and how to put them back, what the pieces were called. We had a lad whose father was a solicitor at Wells. His surname was St. George, and he had rather an aristocratic voice, and I always remember the corporal took great delight in holding up one part of the Bren gun, which was called the piston post, and saying, "And what is this, St. George?" To get the reply, "Piston post, corporal." He seemed to take delight in getting St George to say Piston Post. But yeah, it was largely sort of learning.
But not firing.
Keeping them clean, not firing, you know.
What about any other weapons introduced to bayonet or?
But well, yeah, we obviously learned how to fix bayonets, but our bayonet training took place largely in continuation training.
What about PT? You probably did some PT.
Plenty of PE.
Tell us about it.
We always found that for some reason PE instructors all seem to have high pitched voices. It was quite daunting, really, although I mean, I'd played soccer and I'd been quite reasonably sporting, and I was lean, about 9'9" when I joined up. And but I found it quite demanding, but not so much as it was when we would start doing large, long route marches with full kit and so on. But it was largely rope work and bench work in the gym. I also got to play soccer for the depot team while I was there for a few weeks. They used to play in the Norwich Thursday League. And in fact, when I finished my basic training, I was encouraged to stay and do the whole of my national service at the barracks. But
we'll come back to the football.
But I said no.
Now, so what about, do you go on many cross-country runs around the marathon?
We did a bit of cross-country around the marathon, not a lot, actually. Say most of the PE was in the gym and on the parade ground.
Now, what other training were you doing in the sessions?
That was largely it, I think. I mean, we didn't do very much in the way of warfare training. Again, that largely took place in continuation. I think
no
it was
tactical training or anything.
No.
Well, let's talk. What did you think of your fellow recruits then? I mean, your first impression was they were a mixed bunch. Well,
yeah.
How did you get on with them once you got to know them?
I was sort of fairly easygoing character, and I got on extremely with all of them, basically, I think. A little story, I mean, I know it's hard to believe, but I think we'd been in 3 days, and I woke up in the middle of the night and heard somebody crying. And I couldn't wonder who it was. And so I went to investigate, being a sort of normal, fairly considerate character. And it turned out to be the Borstal lad, who was the hard nut. And I asked him what the problem was. Terry Farmer, his name, and he said he didn't know how to lace his boots up. And he sat there and sobbed in the night. And that's sort of, that brings home to you what sort of, how it affects people. But I've gone extremely well with them. I had some extremely good mates, and some I'd kept in touch with.
Anyone in particular that you might want to remember?
Yeah, there was a chap called John Fox, who subsequently won the MM in Korea with Fusiliers. A chap called Arthur Rouse from Galston, who I still see, Sailor as we call him. And one or two others who I've kept in touch with over the years.
Now, what about the NCOs? The ones, Lance Corporal Garwood, Sergeant Hudson.
No, the Hard brothers were there. They were two brothers, Corporals Hard.
Well, what were they like, these?
I think they treated the recruits extremely well. Garwood was not a particularly likeable NCO, I'll be totally honest with you. He wasn't particularly well regarded, but Sergeant Hudson was a wonderful chappy, really
now,
treats like
why,
kids.
Why was Garwood not liked? And why you know?
Well, because he was very domineering and very conscious of the fact that he had one stripe on his arm. I think the other NCOs tended to be rather more paternal, if you like, to youngsters of 18.
And what was so good about? I mean, you've mentioned Hudson twice now in glowing.
He looked after us. He was anxious to. There was a platoon rivalry between Gristock and Randall, and he was anxious, obviously, for our platoon to be the best platoon. So he encouraged people, and people who weren't doing particularly well, he did his best to make sure that they performed to the best of their ability, and he was a jolly decent NCO.
What about the officers? Do you have much contact?
We had a Lieutenant Simpson, who I found extremely pleasant. He looked after us extremely well, and I remember when we returned to the barracks drunk after the first night parade party, he actually got us through the guard room and got us back to bed. In fact, I woke up with my head at the bottom of the bed and my feet on the pillow. I was violently sick that night. It was neither here nor there, but I'm afraid I hadn't had much in the way of alcohol as a youngster.
Now, what about preparing for things like kit inspections or room inspections or
everything? I mean, that was really part of the severe discipline, because beds had to be made, blankets had to be made up in a particular way and rolled, and if you hadn't done it, it's very difficult to describe, but they had to be folded and enveloped in another blanket. Best boots had to be set out on the bottom of the bed with the studs showing. Studs had to be shone. Boots had to be polished. I always found it very difficult to get a shine on boots.
How much of a shine? I mean, some regiments go to...
Well, we had to bull our boots. I mean, we build our boots up with toothbrush handles and boot polish and heated them up. We all had a really good pair of best boots. And they had to be on display, and they weren't worn, basically. And the kit had to be laid out, obviously, in a very rigid and correct pattern. And that happened sort of reasonably frequent intervals.
And what was the inspection like? I mean, was it?
We stood up your bed, and they came round. The orderly sergeant, orderly officer, or the platoon officer came round and sort of pulled it to pieces if he weren't satisfied with what you'd done, or said, "Jolly good show, Jack," or whatever. And that
did
was
you
it.
Normally get through it yourself, or?
I didn't have any problems, I must admit. Yeah.
And so going through the day, and in the evening, what you'd probably spend some time preparing for kit inspection. What would you do in the evening?
In the evening, we spent a fair bit of time in the barrack room in the evening. I mean, we did spend a bit of time in the naffy.
What was the naffy like, the canteen?
That was all right. One of the lads in our intake, his father was a music teacher at Framlingham College, and he was an excellent pianist. And now he could play classical music with the best of them, but he also boogie-woogie with the best of them as well. So when Charlie Felgate got on the piano in the naffy, we used to stay there and have a reasonable time around the Joanna, and always had some food to supplement what we'd had for tea.
Was it a wet canteen, or did they serve beer?
I don't think they did.
And was there anything else other than the piano, any games to play?
There was a dartboard, I think, and there was table tennis, if I remember rightly, but it was largely the naffy girls providing us with sort of beans and bit to eat and cup of tea and somewhere to go and sit outside the barrack room, where we were all sort of busy, as you say, preparing kit and bulling everything up to make sure that when inspections came, that there was nothing to be criticised.
Did you ever get out a week? You must have got out occasionally, but I mean, get into Norwich?
Yes, but I think the first thing we had to learn how to salute.
Tell us about that. Was it difficult?
No, it wasn't difficult. It was quite easy, actually, but you had to obviously have a battle dress that fitted you, and there were some little bit tweakings went on with a tailor, if they weren't quite a good fit. But the important thing was you had to learn to salute before you could be allowed out into the wide, wide world. So we were allowed into the city after, I think it was a fortnight or so.
And what would you do?
Well, we just get into the city. Well, actually, I used to go and visit an uncle who lived quite close to the city here in Rackheath. So I used to go and visit him and my aunt and my cousin, and used to go with them to the cinema in the city. Went there two or three times in the 6-7 weeks I was here. And I played soccer, as I say, for the depot team on Thursday afternoons.
You didn't go drinking much?
No, not until we had the passing out party at Nelson Barracks.
Now, tell me a bit more about this football then. I mean, how was it organised? What was the standard like?
It was, called Norwich Thursday League. It was the depot team, which was largely permanent staff, and if there was the odd recruit that had some potential to play. They never had a goalkeeper, apparently, so as that was my position and I played to a reasonable standard, they were anxious for me to stay, but I did play several games for them in the league.
What did you think of the standard?
It was... There was Norwich Busman and Norwich Railway and that was sort of amateur standard to not very high level, to be honest. It was, but I found when I played for the battalion team later on, it was a much higher standard.
And was it an all ranks team from the back? I mean, in other words, were there officers or senior NCOs in your team?
I don't remember there being any officers in the team. I think there were NCOs, but they were largely sort of perm staff corporals and perm staff batmen and drivers and those sort of people who were based at the barracks on a permanency.
Now, anything else about your training before you get to the passing out parade? How long was that? After 6 weeks?
6 weeks.
So that would be into November, probably.
Yeah.
Anything else before that?
No, I think that was.
So tell me about the passing out parade. What do you remember of that?
Well, I can't remember who took the salute, to be honest. We practiced the march. We had a band.
When was the competition between
the declared right at the end of basic training? Also, there was a best recruit selected as well, which was presented actually on passing out parade day. John Fox, the lad who won the MM, actually was best recruit. But we
did your family come for the parade?
Yeah, well, Mum did. Mum came up to the parade, yeah. Met up with one or two of the other mothers, I think, and saw the passing out parade. I had the task of being in the blank rank with just me, and I had to move from left to right when we wheeled left to right. Had to have enough savvy to find my way across the other side, which I think I did reasonably well.
And the party afterwards, where was that at?
Down at the old Nelson Barracks. We'd paid up so much a week for that, and I got beer was so cheap anyway, but I'm afraid myself and several others got the worst for wear. And I don't have much recollection of actually getting back to the camp. I remember going to the fish and chip shop, which was at the bottom of Gas Hill, and getting sixpenny worth of chips. And I know I remember chasing the sixpence across the top of the counter. And we were booked in by Lieutenant Simpson, who got us back in. But I was quite ill, to be honest. And we were due to go home the next day. And having been sick, I was made to ensure that everywhere was clean and tidy before we left. But I wouldn't do it again. That was it.
Now, so you went home on leave. That'd be a week's leave?
Or? Yeah.
And then what would happen then? Still November.
Then we went back to the barracks, ready to go to Blenheim Camp Barracks in Edmonds for continuation training.
Why didn't you stay in? I mean, you weren't keen to go to Korea or anything. What you were offered the chance to stay in the barracks.
The position they prepared to offer was a batman to one of the officers, and I wasn't prepared, to be honest, to undertake that sort of role, and I didn't feel that. If I was going to do my national service, I wanted to particularly stay in Norwich, because I thought, well, at least it'd give me the opportunity to see something of life out there. Not necessarily abroad. I mean, I didn't know whether one would go abroad, although Germany seemed to be an attractive place to go to following the war, where during the early 50s when troops were stationed there. So I decided I'd stick with my lot and go continuation training.
So where did you go then? It's Bury St Edmunds. Which barracks was that?
Blenheim Camp.
Is it a barracks or a camp?
Well, it's camp, because Gibraltar Barracks was the Suffolk headquarters, but Blenheim Camp was an actual camp. It was a brigade camp.
Was this which brigade? What? Was it Eastern Brigade or?
You got me, I can't remember. It's East Anglia Brigade, because there were Norfolk, Suffolk, Essex Regiment, Beds and Hearts, Northamptonshire. So there were the five regiments involved.
And this was their training camp?
Yeah.
And what happened when you got there? You get there, was it still November, roughly?
Yeah, it wasn't November. We were allocated to a billet, allocated a
What sort of billet was it?
It was a hut. I think, if I remember rightly, eight beds a side, could be 10 beds a side, I think about 20 in a hut.
Was it as comfortable as a barracks?
It was pleasant. That was, again, was heated by a stove in the middle. It wasn't at all unpleasant. And from then on, we set about becoming soldiers, basically.
Now, so you do much more weapons training now, I presume.
Yeah, a lot more on
the
range.
Weapons training.
We spent a lot of time on the Thetford rifle range with rifle and Bren guns.
Now, how were you firing on a proper rifle range, a proper, you know...
We were firing from different distances, obviously. We took it in turns to actually go down into the butts and mark up where the shots had gone. You fired in the prone position. You had to learn to fire in the standing position. You fired a Bren gun, both in single mode and automatic mode, when you got away with a few shots off every second. We had Sten gun training, but that was done down at Finger and Hoe in Colchester. We went down to one point during the 10 weeks or so. We went down to Finger and Hoe, Marshall's down to Colchester camp there, and where we did Sten gun training, throwing grenades.
What did you think of the Bren?
Oh, it was a fantastic weapon. So it was a wonderful weapon.
What was fantastic about it?
Well, the fact that you could fire it single shot or quickly switch to automatic fire and fire in bursts. And it was a bit, if you were lumbered with having to carry, it was a little bit heavy. But as a weapon to fire, I found it a first-class weapon to sit behind and fire on the range.
Accurate.
Very accurate. I never did have to shoot it in anger. But during that period, we were on the rifle range, the armour always came down with us, and they spent a lot of time adjusting sights during a period you were learning when you were firing to make sure the rifle was matched to you as the individual.
And what about the Sten gun when you got to Finger Hoe?
We only had a couple of sessions with the Sten, and I didn't like that weapon at all.
Now, why not? Because that's not uncommon.
It was a small, fragile submachine gun. It was prone to jam. And we had one unpleasant experience in when we were down on Finger and Hoe range. I remember we had fired and we were walking forward to inspect the targets, and one of the Stens that had been laid down actually started to fire as we walked up the range, and that caused a bit of consternation amongst the NCOs, to be honest. But we had to learn to throw grenades, and one of our comrades managed to drop his grenade in the trench.
Tell me firstly what you were meant to do throwing grenades, or what he
They were done with it. I mean, grenades have either 7 or 4 seconds fuse. You were given a 7 second fuse as a trainee youngster. But you stood in the trench. You were shown with a dummy. You were shown the throwing action, and then you were given a live one, and you were instructed to pull the pin and throw it, which released the lever and released the detonator. You then were told to watch where it landed, and then you ducked. But St. George managed to drop his in the trench. Well, that was very hastily.
So what happened?
Well, the sergeant very hastily picked up and threw it out.
There was always a sergeant next to you.
Yeah, or some NCO stood with you as you actually loved. We did a lot of bayonet practice as well.
Tell us about that, bayonet practice. How was it done?
I found that somewhat ludicrous, to be honest, because they had these straw-stuffed dummies, and you had to actually shriek as you ran at them, and if you didn't shriek loud enough, you were told to go back and run at them again. But, I mean, you ran at them with the bayonet shouting your head off and stuck your bayonet into this bag of straw and then pulled out and stuck in again and twisted it and pulled out and then ran out around the back. And also, well, I don't think I could have done that to a human individual, to be honest. So I think I found bayonet practice a little bit sort of daunting, to be honest.
Did you think it was a legitimate weapon, a useful weapon, or what do you think?
I had hoped and didn't think. I couldn't see that one would ever want to come to close-hand combat to have to use it, to be honest.
So you'd shoot them before you got...
I'd like to think I'd shot somebody before I got there. Yeah.
Did you? Was there any bayonet fencing, they call it?
No.
So it was just charge and stab?
It was up, charge, pull, twist, charge, twist, out, round.
But nothing against an opponent?
No.
What about the was it 2-inch mortar? I think that's the infantry mortar.
Yeah, we had that. Yeah, we did some 2-inch mortar firing, yeah.
What was that like?
Well, it was just quite simple, really, because you just laid beside it, popped the bomb in, and pulled the string, and away it went. Didn't do much of that.
Any other weapons or training? Well, weapons at the
moment. We obviously did a lot of things like 4 mile or 5 mile quick bashes with both full kit and restricted kit route marches. Yeah.
What were they like?
Quite tiring, actually. One in particular, which you had to do, I think it was 5 miles in under the R. Then when you got back, you had to go in the gym, and then you had to carry a squaddy on your back, and then you had to shin a rope. And I think everyone was fit as a flea when you finished, to be honest. It was really getting you really fit.
Were there assault courses?
Yeah, we had assault course. You had...
What were they like?
Quite difficult. Later on, the assault courses abroad were much more difficult, but yeah, there was the usual sort of climbing over walls, running through stream, going through a drain pipe, waterlogged, the usual sort of assault course paraphernalia.
Anything else? Any tactical exercises?
Particularly with the map reading, we had to go away in groups and find a way around to sort of various locations, and we also did some a bit of tactical operations, but not so much.
How did the map reading exercise work? I mean, was that just literally blind?
You were given a map, you were given a compass, you were given grid references, and you were split up into small groups of three or four squaddies at a time. One of you had to sort of try and lead the group. We managed to get lost. We got back after the evening meal had been served.
How did you get lost?
We just weren't very good at it. We learned a lesson from that. But although I'd done geography at school and thought I knew something about map reading, obviously I didn't, because we got lost in the Fordham, around the Bury St Edmunds area, this Fordham Park, and we were, I think, the last ones to arrive back at camp on one of the map reading exercises.